the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Perhaps you have seen the cover story in Time Magazine this week. It is a mud-spattered boy on the front. The title of the issue, the cover story for this week, is The Myth About Boys. Experts say boys are in trouble. Here's why they've got it wrong. That's by David Don Drele. And Mr. Von Drele has written a very provocative piece, a cover story. It's got a lot of interesting material in it, and obviously it's responding to a sense in the culture that something's gone wrong with boys, and that there are particular issues that ought to have our concern. And I'm one of those who believes that there are many issues related to raising boys that ought to have our concern, where boys fit in the culture, the church, and all the rest. That's going to be the substance of our conversation today, but we're not just going to be talking about the cover story in Time Magazine. We're going to have as our guest Christina Hoff Summers, who is the author of the book, The War Against Boys. She is mentioned in this Time article, and for good reason, and we're going to have a great conversation about the issues of boys and our times, and looking at Time's cover story and what that tells us, especially as Christian parents, about where we stand on this issue over against the larger culture. We had a fascinating discussion yesterday about talking to our children about an issue like homosexuality, and talking about it over against the question, is it normal? We had a good conversation, heard from a lot of parents, and overnight I've heard from many by mail. That's another reminder to all of you that we love to hear from you by mail. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com. And as you have the opportunity to do that, just know that we'll be looking forward to hearing from you. And we're always glad to have people join the conversation by email who aren't able to join us during the radio program. By the way, to get ready to call to join the conversation today about boys, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll look forward to our interview with Christina Hoff Summers and looking at this issue together in just a few moments. First, to review some issues in the news. Big news overnight, of course, was the hospitalization of United States Chief Justice John G. Roberts, Jr. after suffering a seizure at a summer home in Maine. The episode is now described as a benign idiopathic seizure. And that's a lot of syllables, right? But it all comes down to the fact that it appears that he had a grand mal, a major seizure that led to a fall with some superficial injuries. But there doesn't appear, at least at this time, to be any underlying problem, such as a tumor or an infection or something that could threaten the Chief Justice's life. Now, obviously, the press is on this from the political side, looking at it also somewhat from the personal side. I think the first thought that ought to come to our minds, other than concern for the Chief Justice and praying for his recovery, is the reminder that the Lord has so structured us communally, you might even say politically, as we organize our lives together, that enormous responsibility falls on certain particular human beings, certain individuals. And you can't get around the fact that as human beings, like all the rest of us, they also, in terms of their vitality and their ability to do their job and fulfill their responsibilities, often come down to matters of health. And it is another sobering reminder, especially when you look at the Supreme Court, that a shift in something like the Chief Justice position or any justice position on that 9-member court could have huge repercussions going throughout the culture, not just in terms of the law, but given the role of the Supreme Court and the courts at large in our culture, this could be simply huge. We'll be following this story with you, although it appears that this is probably a matter now, thankfully, more for the Chief Justice and his doctors than for the rest of the country to be concerned about. But we'll be tracking that with you as we pray for his full recovery. Very interesting article in the New York Times in the Modern Love column by Thomas Anthony Donahue. And by the way, one of the most interesting things about this particular column is that Mr. Donahoe is a family therapist who lives in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. The title of his article is, I Made Him What He Is, But Who Is He? Just listen to the first paragraph. It tells you something about our times. Last December, I got a call from a health and fertility clinic in Cambridge, Massachusetts, asking if I would be willing to respond to a male teenager inquiring about his sperm donor. I donated there in the late 80s, and it seemed any children I had helped create were just now becoming of legal age to contact me if I would allow it. Now, just think about that opening paragraph. It just tells you a great deal about some of the moral dilemmas faced by many people in this society that would themselves be inconceivable, no pun intended, in any previous generation. This whole question of the commercial sperm bank and all the rest. Now you have a man who is contacted by the sperm bank saying that there's a male teenager who wants to know about him, know his identity. I won't read to you the article, but I'll just tell you that it comes down to the fact that this man, who's now a family therapist, whatever that is, my guess is that covers a fairly broad range of counseling positions. He ended up meeting with this teenage boy about the fact that he was his sperm donor. He explained to the boy that he donated his sperm because, quote, I needed extra income, $40 a visit. He says he did it 30 to 40 times over a couple of years. But now it's very different when a good deal later he's facing a teenage kid who is the product of this commercial transaction that he had several years ago. This is what he said. For the past 17 years, I've at times dwelled on these possible children of mine, who they are and where and how many, especially given that the nurse at the donation center said my recipient showed positive inseminations. I felt a sense of relief that I had finally met one of my offspring. Okay, folks, let's just say what a lot of people aren't going to be ready to say. This is wrong. This is not the way this should happen. Something is very, very wrong about a picture in which you have a teenage boy who, according to this article, is being raised by two lesbians, one of whom presumably was his reproductive mother, and they were able to do so given the commercial product of gametes from a sperm bank. This is bizarre stuff. He says this, the man, Mr. Donahoe, as he ends his article, I don't know why I thought to give him some money that day, especially in such an awkward and insufficient way. That's just traced through the article. But a couple days later, while sharing the story of my meeting with a friend, I remembered that $40, that's what he gave the boy, is what I was paid each visit to the sperm bank. I already felt sheepish that my gesture had seemed a bit too transactional, rushed, inept, and definitely cheap. Part of me perhaps wanted to get the business out of the way, give back what I was paid for my part of him, start fresh, but $40, what must he have thought? ? Well, I have to ask the same question. What must he have thought? These are strange days. Speaking of strange days, there's now a website. It's really modeled after something like MySpace or Facebook. It's entitled My Death Space. It was put together by a man by the name of Ari Kraft, and what he did was to put this site together. Actually, it was created by Mike Patterson, a 26-year-old San Francisco paralegal. Mr. Patterson said he created the site to teach teenagers a lesson about risky behaviors, especially when it comes to automobiles. It goes back to this graffiti writer, however, a 13-year-old boy, Ari Kraft. And what you have here is the fact that this young man was killed, and the information about his death is posted on this so that people with a very dark and, well, in a previous generation, they might have said gothic noir kind of twisted interest can go and dwell on all the details concerning the accident, his death, and all the rest. Now, this ought to get your attention. There are 8,000 people signed up for this website already. Now, again, Mr. Patterson, the man who put this together, says it was more or less to make the reality of death accessible to teenagers so that it might make them more careful, responsible, and sober about some of their behaviors. But the reality is most of the people that seem to be going to this site are those that are kind of dwelling on death. My Death Space has become kind of an alternative to MySpace, and that, again, is a commentary on our times. Remember that when the Christian worldview is eclipsed in a culture, one of the things that most perplexes people is death. And that's just a reality. When you lose the horizon of death in the Christian worldview, you have to come up with some explanation for death, and that leads, at least on the part of some people, to a very morbid fascination. And, of course, it also leads to a redefinition of death. CNN's out with a story today indicating that, once again, issues at the end of life are taking up an awful lot of time and concern, raising all kinds of issues in hospitals and medical settings. One doctor said very clearly, he from Washington Medical Center, this is the medical director, John Lynch, he said, our technology is ahead of our morals. From an ethical point of view, we haven't learned when to use our technology. The biggest problem here is futile treatment. That's when it's clear that after some time that a patient under normal medical circumstances is never going to get better. People say there could be a million and one chance of recovery, but we can't work that way. But when it does it become useless to keep tubes feeding and hydrating a patient whose heart works but brain seems dead? End quote. That's the kind of issue that has to arise when in the intersection of two developments, the eclipse of the Christian worldview in the larger culture and the development of these incredible medical technologies. This doctor's right on one thing. Our technology is way ahead of our morality on this. Back to talk about the question, is there a problem with boys? My guest is going to be Christina Hoff Summers. We want you to call and join the discussion. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The cover photograph in this week's issue of Time Magazine is likely to get any parents' attention. It's a mud-spattered boy looking out at the cover. The title is The Myth About Boys. Experts say boys are in trouble. Here's where they've got it wrong. David Vondrela wrote the article for Time. His argument is that even though there's a lot of anxiety about raising boys at this current time, that when you start looking at the social indicators, boys are doing better than they have in a long time. You may remember that earlier this summer, even before the book hit the best-selling list, I wrote an article on The Dangerous Book for Boys by the Golden Brothers, and we also had a good conversation about it here on the air. We talk regularly here about issues related to boys and to raising boys. I think most of us realize that something is very, very different. But what you have in this article in Time Magazine's cover story this week is the argument that a lot of this anxiety is probably misplaced. One of the authorities cited in the article is Christina Hoff Summers of the American Enterprise Institute. Dr. Summers is one of my favorite authors. She wrote the book in 2000 entitled The War Against Boys, and she's our guest on the program today. Dr. Summers, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Nice to be here.
In your book, the preface, written back in 2000, you begin with the words, "It's a bad time to be a boy in America." Time says you're probably exaggerating. What do you think?
Well, I don't think they say I was exaggerating in 2000. If you go back and look at the, I mean, boys were well significantly behind girls academically, but there was also a lot of writers who were attributing all this pathology to boys and claiming that there was William Pollack at Harvard who, at the time of the killings at Columbine, he used those boys as emblematic of boys everywhere. And I tried to say in the war against boys, don't pathologize them. Just help them become better readers and higher achievers, and don't demonize them and don't treat them like girls because they are different from girls. But I never was part of that group that wanted to treat boys as if they were in some kind of mental health free fall. I never believed that.
Well, one
but
of the things I
they
appreciate.
They are in an academic free fall, and I think they're confused because they're, at the time I was writing, less now, but at that time there was a lot of disapproval. If you go back and look at just the rhetoric, take your daughters to work day, boys
right.
are supposed to stay in school and do these punishing little exercises and so forth.
Well, one of the things I appreciate about you, Dr. Summers, not only in this book but in other books, is that you really don't buy into a lot of the therapeutic worldview anyway. And when you look at the situation in 2000, Columbine in the background and all the rest, your book makes a great deal of sense. But I want to go on and say I think it makes a great deal of sense in 2007 as well. In terms of the fact that I think Time Magazine is missing something, and I want to see, especially given your role as a social scientist, I want to see if you agree with this argument. I think that, especially given the illustrations and the examples that Time Magazine uses, it looks like boys from intact families and middle-class homes are doing pretty well. But that's really not the story, I think, nationwide, is it?
No, and if you look at, I mean, of course, boys that have every possible protection, naturally, they're, you know, one critic of my work said, oh, boys are doing fine. You know, they're going to college at the same rate of girls. It's only poor boys, and it's only African-American boys and Hispanic boys that are in trouble. Well, that's a lot of boys.
Over half.
And with upper middle-class boys, they are behind their sisters in reading and writing, and they probably will be less likely to go to the best colleges than the girl sitting next to them. But they're not in, that's not, you know, a catastrophe. But the serious problem is a huge cohort of underachieving, barely literate boys who are not going to find a place for themselves in an information economy. And that group is growing, and we're doing very little about it compared to other countries.
Well, I think one of the other pathologies we have to talk about here is the fact that we're trying to raise millions of boys with single moms without dads. And this is an experiment never tried before in human history. And it's not going well.
Dads and in Amelia, schools that are increasingly, especially the elementary schools, are highly feminized. And boys, they're getting rid of recess. And there's this therapeutic education I've been critical, where they, you know, want to change tug of war to tug of peace and play tag where no one is ever out. And, you know, these
and no dodgeball. Talk about
no
heresy.
Dodgeball. Boys need rough and tumble play. They thrive on it. Girls like it, but they don't need it as much as boys. It's not their dominant play. For boys, it is. That's why I think The Dangerous Book for Boys is so wonderful and welcome. And I also think that Time writer, he was just a little confused. It's very hard to read that article and figure out really what he thinks. He has a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I just thought he could have done a better
job.
Well,
I think it's very interesting. You know, when you mention the author of the article, Mr. Vondrele, I think it's very interesting. He begins the article by mentioning that he has, a 10-year-old boy?
Right.
A son. And so he probably has a very personal interest in this. But again, if you're a 10-year-old boy being raised in a home where your dad's a reporter at Time magazine, you're probably doing all right.
Right. That's right. And the other thing is, if you are, it's very curious for researchers, is if you go to deprived homes and you say you go to poor urban family with a mother and say African American boy and girl, the girl's doing a lot better academically. Her chances of going to college are dramatically better than her brother's. Same with blue collar homes. If you have all sorts of economic stress on the family, the girls are more likely, those girls from those families are more likely to try to improve themselves, and the boys just sort of give up. They're much more likely to be disengaged in the formal language of education speak. They're much more likely to just give up, become indifferent, and as I said, just not prepare themselves for the world we live in.
Well, and when you talk about the world we live in, the world I live in is when I meet with my fellow college and university presidents, one of the things that is a constant issue of conversation is that girls are outnumbering boys on most campuses and on some campuses by enormous disproportionate numbers.
See, this is another problem. I mean, he couldn't cover everything in Time magazine, but we're going to see something very strange, which is there's going to be a mismatch between the education of men and women in this country. Women are going to be vastly better educated because it's approaching, the college differential is approaching, it's been 57%, then it went to 58% female. In many colleges, it's already 60, even 62% on African-American campuses, 63% female. So when you see a differential like that, that introduces all sorts of sociological havoc with girls not having anybody to date on campus or a very limited supply of boys, although it's not altogether bad for the boys. They do get, they enjoy themselves having a pick of all the girls, but it's not a good situation. And we were at least 10 years, maybe 20 years late in addressing it. People don't remember, but we had these groups like the American Association of University Women, the Wellesley Center for Research on Women, the Harvard. All they talked about was the short-changed girl. People forget that we spent years and years. Congress gave millions of dollars to address the needs of girls. Now, some of this was well spent, but they should have been spending an equal amount on boys who were as needy as the girls. But it was driven by hardline feminists. I consider myself a feminist, but I'm not a radical feminist. This was driven by radicals who were angry at men. They took it out on boys.
Very well said. My guest today was Dr. Christina Hoff Summers. Her book, The War Against Boys, is still in print and still very much ought to be on the reading list of concerned and aware parents. We'll be back for your conversation. You may have read the Time magazine article, or in any event, if you've got a boy or boys, or you care about boys in this society, you've got a stake in this as well. Give us a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, welcome back to the Albert Mohler Conversation. That's what it is. It's a program of intelligent Christian conversation. We welcome you. Just call us at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Matt calling from Moscow Mills, Missouri. Go ahead, Matt.
Yes, Dr. Mohler. I feel that because there's a lot of homes without fathers, that the sons simply just don't have a pattern to follow on growing up and somebody's footsteps to follow in.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important points we can make here, Matt, and I appreciate that. Let's track that out just a little bit. Let's try to figure out why that is so important. Matt, number one, are you a father right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you have a boy?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's just think through this for a moment. What do you see as your essential role in being a father to a son?
I'm a Christian, of course, and I try to set an example of a good home atmosphere and show a good work ethic and following God. And
you show him what a man does by what you do and how you lead and how you work. And you're also, I assume, shaping his character by teaching and by discipline.
And we hunt and fish together and stuff like that, too.
Well, that's great. That's great. I appreciate your call. The what I wanted to try to get out there is that you can talk about the need for a father just with some people hearing that and saying, yeah, well, why? I think it's important to get out there and say boys need role models. Boys need control. Boys need authority. Boys need teachers. Boys need guides. And what we know, for instance, from tracing a lot of issues is that at very early ages, boys need dads in the home to know what he's supposed to grow up to be, just to settle him in his own identity as male, as masculine, as a boy. And then as boys get older, they go through different stages where they need different things from their dads. Teaching, correction, push, encouragement, just all kinds of affirmation, things like that that are absolutely necessary. You take dad out of the equation, and you have a really, really bad pathology. It's one of the things we were talking about with Dr. Christina Hoff-Summers. When you start looking at the article, the cover story in this week's Time magazine, there is a lot of encouragement there. And even Dr. Summers seemed to reflect on the fact that over the last 7 years or so, something has changed in the society. We're not really stuck on boys, thinking about them constantly as, you know, dressed in gothic stuff and in the Columbine attacks and things like that. That happened, and it still, to some degree, happens. But we no longer see that as emblematic of a boy crisis. The boy crisis now, as I see it, is more in the fact that you've got the pathology of millions and millions of boys being raised without fathers. You have the pathology of millions and millions of boys getting behind in the schools and getting left out and not going on to college. And when, from a Christian perspective, you start looking at the future with a biblical worldview in mind, you see all kinds of issues. Because in this society, education means advancement. And so if you have a really disproportionate number of girls going to college, that means, here's the bottom line, you're going to have a society in which men are working for women. I mean, the women are going to be the bosses. That's what education is going to get for them. And I appreciate the fact that Christina Hoff-Summers said, look, girls were behind. Girls did need a lot of attention. But when society gives that attention to girls and didn't for all those years give attention to boys, this is where we end up. I want to come back behind her and say, not as a sociologist, but as a theologian. The bigger issue here is, I think, when you have a breakdown of the natural family, I don't care how much social support you're going to try to bring, it's not going to be possible to replace a father in a home. When you start breaking down the home, and you start treating the natural family as just one among other family models that society should consider just to be normal and all of equal status, then you really bring into the heart of the society the massive problem of boys without dads. Now, obviously, there's a problem with girls without dads as well. Fathers play a very important role in the formation of girls. But the pathology really, really begins to show up, and show up very quickly, and show up in ways that are very hard to correct at later stages when boys really get into trouble. The phone number is 877-893-8255 to join the conversation. Call 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you. And there may be someone out there who says, look, I don't think there's a problem. And I don't think there ever has been a problem. Feel free to call and make that point as well. But I really want to hear from parents. And know, what is your sense? David Vondrele, writing in Time Magazine, says, there's no big boy problem. Maybe when you think about your boy in school or your boys in society, you see a different picture. Maybe you work with young people at church. Maybe you're an educator and you see them in the schools. You have a stake in this as well. Give us a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Back with your calls. I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The Moeller family just got back from vacation. I have a 15-year-old son, Christopher. We had a great time just being out in the woods and being on the lake a lot. And speaking of the lake, if you look at this Time Magazine article, you're going to see a picture. In fact, at the very beginning of the article, when you actually open the magazine, of, about 15 teenage boys in the lake at Falling Creek Camp in North Carolina, the Blue Ridge Mountains. And it says this: teens at Falling Creek Camp in North Carolina's Blue Ridge Mountains have 150 lush and rugged acres to explore. Now, one of the arguments made in this article is that the boys are doing pretty well. Well, these boys probably are doing pretty well. They're probably coming from privileged homes. I went to the website of the camp, and it's several thousand dollars to send your son to this camp. But who wouldn't want to go if you're a boy? I mean, look, I'm ready to go myself. Just looking at the stuff they get to do, from archery and shooting and just all the kinds of stuff that a traditional boys' camp would want to do. And, you know, I think it's safe to say that an awful lot of these boys are doing very well. If they're going to prep schools and they're going to, into programs such as the Frederick Douglass Academy in Harlem that's also profiled in this, I think they're probably doing pretty well just in terms of social progress and educational progress and all the rest. That's just not the whole story. Speaking of camp, just for a minute, I have to tell you that it is interesting. Along with the emergence of the Dangerous Book for Boys, which is still big on the bestseller list, it's interesting to see how a lot of these things are making a comeback. In Belgrade Lakes, Maine, there's a camp called Pine Island Camp, also a camp for boys age 9 to 15. The Boston Globe did an article on this, and I clipped it out before going on vacation myself because I found it very interesting. These teenage kids, all boys, and by the way, their parents are paying between $6,000 and $6,500 dollars per boy per summer. They don't have any electronics at all. No iPod, no television or anything. They have to pump their water and all the rest. And they love it. And it tells you a lot about raising boys when you look at the end of this. A 13-year-old boy named Stuart of Washington, D.C. says he doesn't miss TV at camp, quote, because nothing good is on in the summer anyway. And he only misses the internet when he wants to research something. And listen, this is the last line in the article, quote, it's too much fun here and you're too busy or too tired to miss those things, he said. Yeah, well, that's kind of the idyllic summer camp. Keep the boys so busy. And you look at the schedule in these camps, and boy, they are busy. They don't miss these things. They fall into their bunks and sleep. Let's go to Jeannie in Tucson, Arizona. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Hi, I'm a single mother, 15-year-old son. Father lives in New Mexico. My son has become disengaged over the last year. His father would rather buy him something than spend time with him. No words of affirmation. My son is a star athlete in hockey. However, his father never sees him in that light at all. My son, I've noticed, had been straight A student up until this just last year. Freshman started to slip a little bit, not really desiring much in terms of his future anymore. I see a couple things happening. One, obviously his father and how his father interacts with them and never encourages them, never gives them words of affirmation. High school brought in a whole lot of new kids. My son started to hang out with kids that had no desire to accomplish anything in life. And my son has no purpose in life, I believe, because he doesn't know the Lord. His father doesn't know the Lord, so that's caused a lot of trouble. And
Jeannie, let me ask you a quick question. I got an intervention is the word we're going to have to use here. The psychotherapeutic community uses it, but I'm going to co-opt it here for a moment. Let me intervene in your conversation here to just ask you, are you a part of a good church there in Tucson?
Yes, I am.
And does your son attend the church with you?
It's a fight to get him there. His father has told me he forbids me to take him to any kind of church function or anything where there's praying, talking about God, singing about God.
Well, we got a big problem there. I would really encourage you to go to the leaders of your church, the elders of the church, whatever they're called where you are, and lay out your heart's concern for your son and really make clear, as I hope they would know already, that this is not just your problem, it's their problem. And that your son, bless his heart, needs some help and needs some help fast. And I am horrified to hear the pathetic example that he sees in his own father. And to hear again, you would hope that there could have been intervention even there, from the elders of the church or something earlier. But that doesn't mean that he ever would have heard. But Jeannie, I want you to know that I and many people who are listening to this conversation are praying for you and for your 15-year-old son. And I would say before you start looking at all the kinds of places where society would tell you to look for help in the local church. And I just pray that that church with which you are involved is a gospel church that will stand upon the scripture and that it's led by godly men who will take responsibility and give you genuine help in this. And God bless you for your concern for your son, Jeannie. And thanks so much for calling. Let's go to Thelma calling from Mission, Texas. Go ahead, Thelma.
Oh, yes. Hi, my name is Velma, and I just wanted to just reiterate what it is that you're saying, because I'm a librarian on a campus in a middle school, and I see this happening daily where the young men in our school systems, they're just completely taking a leadership role. And that's very worrisome because, you know, it's great to see the women being, you know, the young ladies being strong and everything, but you start to think about the future, and it's like, well, are the girls going to get used to being in this leadership role? And, you know, how is it going to affect, you know, the family situations?
Absolutely.
You know, when the decisions have to be made, financial decisions, you know, rearing the children, disciplining the children. And it's very concerning for me as a parent of two daughters. I have a son and and two daughters. And it's, you know, it's very worrisome because not even the educators or anybody is stepping up to the plate to make sure that these young men are being provided with experiences that are going to culture them and make them into leaders, because that's what they're going to be in families, if not in the community.
That's what they're supposed to be, Velma, and you're making such an eloquent point. The word leader is what, and the verb to lead is what I just wanted to jump out with when I heard you talking here. Let me ask you a question, just with time getting away from us here. Velma, very quickly, why do you think we are in this situation with these boys? How do we get here?
The lack of absentee fathers, or even if they are at home, they're not involved with them at all whatsoever. They don't have any conversations with their sons. They don't know how to treat a young lady at all. You know?
I think it's so important for us to hear that today, coming from your voice, Velma. I said much the same at the beginning of the program, but I think it's just very, very meaningful to hear that from you in your position as an educator watching these boys in the schools and observing their families. And I really appreciate the point that it's not just that there's not a father in the home. Sometimes there physically is one. He's just not stepping up to the plate and doing what fathers are supposed to do. Back with some final thoughts in just a moment. I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. Summer is getting fast away from us, and I just sense right now there are a lot of people who are coming back off of vacations, as I recently have and others, and we're looking at the new school season beginning, and as I was just kind of around the community over the last couple of days, I noticed all the back-to-school sales and all the rest, and, you know, my guess is that there are an awful lot of boys right now whose parents, at least, are thinking about the next school year. They may not have their minds too much on it. But I think one of the big issues that a lot of parents are going to face is the fact that boys are going to be going into an educational environment where, by and large, it's not really boy-friendly. And the younger you go, the worse it is. in elementary school, and Christina Hoff Summers just earlier in this program made this point, it's really a very feminized environment. That's really true all the way through many grades in a lot of schools, but especially in elementary schools. And there are an awful lot of little boys who are being told in the elementary years, first, second, third grade, you know, kindergarten as well, especially those early grade school years, that they have to sit still for inordinate lengths of time and do stuff that girls love to do and that they don't love to do. I just want to encourage parents, watch your children. Be very, very attentive to the educational choices you're making and realize that you may need to make some different choices for boys than you did for girls. And if you have both boys and girls, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. They're just not the same. And the educational process, and I say this as an educator and as a father, the educational process really brings that out in a very, very clear way. And I think there is an epidemic right now of boys who are being diagnosed with educational problems when in many ways their only problem, if you want to put quotation marks around that word, is that they're boys. And there are particular learning skills and learning styles that come to boys more easily. And this is where dads really need to get involved. A part of what a dad needs to do is say to the boy, education really is important, and you're going to have to do it. I'm going to hold you accountable for this. And I'm going to be deeply involved in your educational life. I want to know how your grades are. I want to know how you're doing. I want to know what you're learning, because I'm more concerned about your heart than I am even about your head and how you're handling this in terms of character, not only in terms of intellect. But dads also need to get involved sometimes in order to say, look, this just isn't the right educational context for him. He's just not going to thrive in this. And an awful lot of moms certainly are attentive to that and instinctively know that, but this is an issue in which moms and dads really need to be making the right decisions. We're going to be talking about that on Friday of this week. On Friday, we're going to be talking about making the right educational choice for your kids. Homeschool, private school, Christian school, public school. That's an issue that's right, live, and very, very urgent for an awful lot of parents. Tomorrow's Ask Anything Wednesday, we'll be talking about what's on your mind. I'll look forward to meeting you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.